And just like that, we complete 10 episodes of Casa
Season 1. Our 10 episodes are done, but we can't wait to share Season 2 with you, starting with Episode 11, Cosmic Number.
Very, very soon, we'll tell you towards the end of this particular episode what the next episode will be about, but I'm sure it's going to stir a lot of commotion, a lot of, You'll have to wait and see. You'll have to wait and see. Episode 11. This episode is dedicated not to us in particular, although we will be sharing our experiences interacting with it, but we will dedicate it to ayahuasca, a very popular word these days. A millenary brew, originary of Latin America, South America, although it grows in many different parts of the world, but very popular amongst tribes and cultures, traditional ancestry people who have used it for many purposes, including spiritual and medicinal, because this is a very powerful potion that Mother Nature provided us with to heal before there were hospitals and to expand our spirit before there were religions. So it's really part of our essence, our history as evolutionary mankind, no? And we want to tell you a little bit about the plant and also what we felt. There are many things to take into consideration, and we both have had very different experiences that allows us to share two different sides of the story for you to have a in-between idea of what it could possibly be. And with that said, Valeria is going to tell you everything about not just her experience, but how we're going to break down this episode.
Yes, as Santiago mentioned, we've both had our ayahuasca ceremonies individually. This was before we met. I've had a powerful, beautiful, very magical ceremony 7 years ago. That was the only ceremony I've had in my life. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about doing it again just because I feel it's calling me. And we'll explain what this calling feels like in a bit. But today's episode will be divided in the following order. Well, first, Santiago will share the definition of ayahuasca. He's more of the intellectual part of Casa Earth, providing all the information. I'm more of the spiritual, emotional part of it, sharing things from my heart and my own experiences. Later, we'll both share what our ceremonies felt like, what we lived through, what we experienced, and why we connected with this beautiful plant so much. And then we'll respond to the following questions. And these are questions that we received from you on our Instagram accounts. We did polls and we left a comment box. And based on all the questions that we received, we chose the ones that were that got repeated a lot. And of course, this episode is meant to focus on those providing the answers and relieving the doubts and insecurities that you might have about this ceremony. So the first question is going to be how to prepare yourself. This includes diet, sex, mind and spirit, no drugs, and we'll explain why, no pharmaceuticals, and why you should write your questions prior to the ceremony. The second question is, what are the dangers of ayahuasca? Third question, how to choose a good and trustworthy shaman? Fourth question, what to avoid and our advices to you based on our experiences? Fifth question, what comes after, which is the grounding, integration. Do you call it in English too? Integración? Integration? Yeah. And the last question and very crucial one, more than a question, it's a topic that we want to cover, is the extinction of this plant, what it's facing right now and why it's putting shamans in danger. And that's based on the commercialization of this plant and how popular it has become in today's world.
Okay, so let's begin by giving a rough definition of what ayahuasca is, because there is some confusion, or there was some confusion in this household in particular a few days ago, because I insisted that ayahuasca was the name of this millenary medicinal brew consumed mostly or mainly in South America.
And I insisted it was the name of the plant.
And she insisted it was the name of the Banisteriopsis capi vine, which is one of the ingredients that goes into ayahuasca. And yes, it's also called ayahuasca. So it's both the brew and one of the ingredients in some places, and mixed with the Psychotria viridis, or the chacruna plant. I think it's kind of complicated to say all these traditional scientific names, but it's also very nice to understand the origin of the prefixes that are used to identify these plants and how they usually signify something that makes them quite characteristic and unique. The point being that this brew in Colombia, at least, is known as yahe, and it has been used for mainly spiritual healing, for communion rites and rituals, and in situations where knowledge and experience has to be transmitted from one generation to the next, or maybe even the welcoming of a liminal moment in the transition of a male or a female indigenous person. And it helps by dissolving the ego, basically, and bringing you back into an ancestry that might not be fully graspable, but that creates your spirit, your person, your avatar, and reminds you of a few things that we might call destiny if we pay close attention. But yeah, basically, Banisteriopsis capi, a vine that meets the Psychotria viridis. I still can't get that word right, which is basically a shrub, you know, and sometimes it's mixed with, I don't know, Brugmansia or Datura, which are other flowers very popular in subtropical regions. But basically, the Banisteriopsis capi has an MAOI, which is an enzyme that delays the breakdown of the DMT, also known as the spirit molecule or the God molecule, that is found in the chacruna plant. If we were to consume DMT, for example, in smokable presentations, the effect would usually wear off around 15, 20 minutes. That's like a good pharmacokinetic without me being an expert on the subject. But what I'm trying to say is that basically our body metabolizes DMT quite quickly, and this particular molecule is responsible for most of the ego dissolution situations, the visuals, the experiences, the trauma healing, the mystical situations. So thanks to the combination of both, this DMT lasts for a little longer. Usually the heightened experience kicks in around 4 to 6 hours, but it can last as long as 12 hours or more. And yeah, originally from the Amazon basin, and now very popular among the world, so much so that we decided to create this podcast and share our experiences. So yeah, over to you.
Okay, so for me, it started 7 years ago. And as I mentioned, the plant, the Mother Nature kind of calls you. I had a lot of fears when it came to the ceremony, a lot of insecurities and doubts. My brother had done it already, but I think he was probably the closest person to me that was talking about ayahuasca. I did my research and I wasn't ready, and I just didn't feel like I wanted to go through hours of losing control, and I'll explain that later. But that's pretty much what you have to do in order to experience the magic and the beauty of this potion. But yeah, so 7 years ago, I quit banking. 8 years ago, I quit banking and I was going through this transition and I felt lost, but found at the same time because I had found my calling and my purpose, which was to create a platform, talk about nature protection, sustainability, and becoming a better human. But I also felt a deeper connection to spirituality and holistic therapies. And that's how I met my shaman. I went to Bolivia to visit my family. I think it was my aunt and my brother that were talking about the shaman, and it was like the family shaman, and I needed to go see him. And apparently he is a person that doesn't like to offer ayahuasca ceremonies to everyone. He actually chooses the souls that will take part of that ceremony with him. And if random people or anyone asked him if they could be part of an ayahuasca ceremony, he would literally say yes or no. Like, no, I can't do it with you, or yes, you're welcome to do it with me. I went to him for a Reiki therapy. I've mentioned what Reiki is in past episodes, but it's the movement of energy in your body. Remember that we have chakras, and sometimes these energies get blocked in our bodies based on emotions and traumas. And pretty much what the shaman does is moves its hands around your body without touching your body, and you feel the movement of energy. It's incredible, and I've been doing it for years, and I love that therapy. So I went to him for that, and when we finished the therapy, he approached me and said, "You will come back and do an ayahuasca ceremony with me." I remember laughing and saying, "I'm not ready, but thanks so much for the offer. Whenever I'm ready, I'll let you know." After that, a year went by, and within a year, just very random yet cosmic things started happening in my life. I began having this eagerness to learn more about ayahuasca. So I started researching. I went online. I asked friends, random people that I met on events started talking about it without me even asking. And I think I even dreamt about it. Many, many things. Like, I felt that it was calling me. There's no other way to explain it but a calling. You start seeing it in friends, conversations, online. You know, your soul is telling you to ask more about it, to learn more about it. And I texted the shaman, the healer in my family, and I told him, "I think I'm ready. I think the plant is calling me for a reason, and I think I'm ready to do the ceremony with you." So I planned my trip. I went back home to Bolivia. I was living in Miami at that time. I went back home to Bolivia, and here's the part that probably no one expects. You might have heard different experiences from different people when it comes to ayahuasca. Some have a beautiful ceremony and see amazing things and colors and shapes and everything that represents love. Others see a lot of insecurities and darkness and kind of sad thoughts and emotions and images that you need to work on. My experience was kind of both. It had so much love, but it also the environment wasn't the right environment or the environment that I would want my second ceremony to be in. So to summarize the whole situation, I arrived in Bolivia. My healer, for some reason, thought that I would clean bad energy, bad jujus, any curses that my family had for them, that I would do the work for my family, and that all that darkness, all those fears, all that trauma would come out in my ceremony. So he chose a group of, I think we were around 8 to 10 people, of incredible human beings, but human beings that went through so much pain in their lives, pain that I can't even describe. It was so profound and so hard. And he sat us together in a circle and he chose a rehab center in La Paz, Bolivia, Barin El Alto. So if you've never been to Bolivia, this is a very cold and high place. The altitude, you can't even breathe there. And I was born in La Paz and I was raised in Santa Cruz, but still, as a Bolivian, it's really hard for me to breathe and handle the temperatures there and everything around you. But he chose a rehab center there. And this room. It was just like a dorm, and he created a circle on the floor. He asked us to sit down with pillows underneath us and a bucket in front of us. They placed a candle in the center, and after saying a few prayers and explaining a few things and getting to know each other, they start serving ayahuasca. So right here in this situation, it was kind of like all my fears combined. Fears of darkness, because we were in a very dark room. Once we started the ceremony, the candles were out, so I couldn't see anything. It was pitch black. So that was one of my fears, being completely redefined, and I had to embrace it. The second one was being in a circle with complete strangers, especially during an ayahuasca ceremony. And the third one was just embracing my own darkness, my own fears and insecurities and mental demons. And I felt that was the purpose of the ceremony for me. Ayahuasca, the plant, the mother nature knew what it was doing, and so did my healer. But so I started drinking one cup of ayahuasca. It didn't do anything for me. Some people drink one or two. I drank two. I think, Santiago, you said that some of your friends drank three. Yeah. So for me, it was two did it. I did not puke for some reason. I did not vomit. I didn't have a loose stomach either, but I did feel that whenever I surrendered, when I finally surrendered to the plant, everything came to life. And it was such a magical experience, in spite of the fact that I was facing my worst demons ever. I felt protected. Just to give you a glimpse of what I saw, my hands, like all of my fingers, became flowers, and each flower was opening in front of me like roses, beautiful and slowly. Then my feet, my toes became roots, and the entire room became a forest. And I could see kind of like Mother Nature in my third eye. It was this beautiful woman with so many flowers, like a flower crown around her head. And I felt the presence of my grandmother. If you listened to the previous episode, you know that I had a very deep connection with my grandmother from my dad's side. And I felt her there. I felt her hugging me. I felt completely protected, even though I heard people screaming and vomiting and crying. I was in my zone, and I was in my space. And even with my shaman, like, I couldn't see anything, but whenever he was chanting Icaros next to me, these powerful healing songs and words next to me and surrounding me and trying to clean the energy around me and embracing me, I felt protected. I didn't feel threatened as a woman. I didn't feel fearful of him. I didn't feel fearful of the situation. I felt at bliss. And that was my question, a question I always say this, but whenever you're thinking about your ayahuasca ceremony, it helps to write down the questions that you have, the questions that you want to ask Pachamama, Mother Earth. And one of my questions was if I am protected spiritually and physically. And that ceremony responded in all the right ways. Like it reminded me that I'm protected by something above me, by a higher power, and that I shouldn't be afraid. And it also reminded me that I can handle my own fears, that I'm not alone. So that was my experience. It lasted, I think, 8 to 12 hours. That's what ayahuasca usually does. The psychoactive factor, I think it lasted around 8 hours, and then comes the integration. So the shamans did like a little cleansing energetic ceremony after the ayahuasca. So they asked us to lay down, and they started cleaning our bodies. There was a bucket with fire, and all the energy was moving towards the bucket. They also did a cosmic surgery, energetic surgery. If you don't know what that is, you can Google it. It's honestly amazing. They get to move so much energy within you, healing diseases or anything that you're feeling. In my case, it had to do with my ovaries and my sexual energy and all the blockages that I had. And after that, we got to sit down in the circle again and share what we saw, our thoughts, ask questions. And that helped me so much to understand what was happening, because it was my first time. And then we got to rest, because the entire ceremony, something that you should try to avoid is falling asleep. They always ask you for you to sit down or lay down, but make sure that you are awake the entire ceremony. And 12 hours later, I went back home, And the real integration happens after that. And I'm not only talking about hours or days, I'm talking about years. I still feel it until today. This happened 7-8 years ago, 7 years ago, I think. And it reshaped my way of viewing nature and connecting with nature and the way I define life and my purpose, if I'm protected or not, like those fears, my dark corners, embracing everything and understanding that humans have darkness and light and the world has darkness and light and we need the balance of both. And here we are now. So that was my experience. I've only done it once. I feel that it's calling me again now. I had this discussion with Santiago the other day. But if I were to do it now, I would choose my set and setting. So my mindset, of course, and also the setting, the environment. I would probably do it in our garden with a fire, with a very close group of best friends, people that I know and whose energies I recognize, and my shaman, of course.
So remember how a few minutes ago I was saying that Yahe is the name that it is known by in Colombia? Well, that was my first experience with it in school, in high school. A few of my generation were very young psychonauts, and they loved exploring the limits of consciousness and alternate realities and spiritual boundaries and etc. And I mean, I'm very happy I ended up going to that school, just because we were a bunch of weirdos and we all contributed some random thing to each other's lives. So definitely very grateful to them for that experience. I did not try it until a few years later, though. I think I had planned or wanted to plan something that inevitably ends up happening beyond any expectations or even beyond any preparation. So I always thought my first time was going to be in the middle of the jungle in a very deep ceremony, you know, morphing into a jaguar and escaping across the canopies or something like that. Well, my first experience ended up being outside of Miami, basically where they grow vegetables.
Homestead?
It wasn't Homestead. It was, I don't know, I remember the, I mean, I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to put these people in trouble, but it was definitely a different part of town. Anyway, so yeah, it happened there because this traditional indigenous person, a Hunikuin from Brazil, was visiting at the moment and had brought the brew. And I don't know, we just got invited and it kind of like played out and I was like, okay, let's go and do it. But it wasn't the best situation because it was basically in like this backyard and the preparation wasn't that great. You know, the atmosphere, I feel like this was probably like one of their first ayahuasca ceremonies internationally. And I don't know, it just felt a little off. And we also had some sananga, which is this burning, stinging eye drop that you get to clean your vision before the first ceremony. So I think that was traumatic enough to keep me like on my toes for the rest of the night. And I don't know, yeah, it just didn't kick in the way I expected. Maybe I had too many expectations. Like, we started asking people if that was normal, and some people said, yeah, it all depends on, you know, how la abuelita wants to treat you the first time. Maybe you were too scared, like try to let go the second time. So anyway, I ended up leaving that ceremony even before like it was officially closed. So I knew the second time I was going to get a beating for being so disrespectful. And the second time happened by chance. I was in the middle of this road trip in Costa Rica with a friend. And for some reason, we got a call saying, hey, we have two extra spots. Like, do you happen to know any two solo travelers who would be down to join a ceremony later tonight? And we're like, yeah, of course, let's go and do it. Like, we definitely have to take advantage of the situation. And I got there and, you know, like, we were very grateful for the opportunity and very respectful. I was a little nervous, but not so much. And I thought I was going to be able to control it and be, you know, more respectful by meditating and sitting straight all night and, you know, honoring this opportunity. And I took one cup, amazing Peruvian shaman, beautiful, beautiful songs, amazing Icaros, really nice spirit. He would appear as a very huggable bear later on in the ceremony. But going back to, you know, that first cup, very, very bitter mix, very thick. I knew it was going to hit hard just because of how powerful the flavor was. And I ended up trying to meditate for maybe like 20 minutes until my legs became two huge anacondas. And then I just had to let loose and I was taken for a ride, basically the ride of my life. I saw so many things that I probably didn't analyze as formally or didn't honor as directly. But yeah, it gave me messages that were very profound. Like it showed me death and spoke to me about my mother. But I guess I was in denial and didn't integrate it the proper way. So I thought that perhaps it was going to be, you know, one of my older grandmothers who were going to depart. But okay, I guess it was my mom's ticket that was called. So yeah, that was that. And a few other situations where I still haven't realized the calling. And this was, what, 5 years ago, 4 years ago? But something to do with the blessing of my hands to provide some sort of healing opportunities to people. We'll tell you about our polarity course, which we took a few weeks ago in another episode. And, you know, so many more things that have been manifesting themselves over the past few years. So definitely, you know, take a notebook with you, write down questions, answers, feelings, sights, sounds, because although they feel very vivid, they will eventually subside and they will disappear and you will start forgetting them and then you're going to regret it. I wrote everything down. But, and that's rule number two, don't lose your notebook. I left my notebook back in Costa Rica, but, you know, I guess that's also part of the experience. I guess I took what was really of importance and are still trying to digest and integrate it. My third ceremony was in Colombia. I thought it was going to be, you know, just as powerful, just as spiritual, but no, it was in the outskirts of Bogota, in Sesquilé. It was a beautiful ceremony because it was with a local indigenous community, and I felt part of a very foreign ritual. I think I didn't have too many expectations of what was going to happen then, and I dedicated most of my energy to really appreciating that I was seeing different social dynamics and that, you know, they would treat me as one of themselves, which included also a lot of bullying, but, you know, like in a friendly way. Yeah, just communion. That was a beautiful experience, but little to no visuals in that one, just a good overall feeling. And yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, they say there's no such thing as a bad trip. There will be bad moments, bad experiences. Of course, we're telling you like some of the highlights, but yeah, you lose fear of living because you understand what death is. You know, you become energy, and that is a very powerful feeling that can play with your mind, your heart, your body, your spirit. So, you know, it takes a lot of time to integrate that and respect it. Also important to take some time between ceremonies and not just, you know, make it a habit. Try to understand each of the lessons as much as you can, because la abuelita, Mother Ayahuasca, can also be very, very hard on you. I don't know. Did I miss something?
No.
Icaros, beautiful music, lovely people. Breakdown of the ego. Yeah, I think I checked all the boxes.
You did. And I think it also shows a different perspective to what I experienced and what Santiago experienced. Every person will have a different ceremony, very unique, very personal, what you will see, how you will feel, how you'll integrate. But here are some tips on how to prepare. We want to share how to prepare for your ceremony. It depends on each healer and shaman, I think, but they will give you a list of things that you should and you shouldn't do prior to your ceremony. In my case, mine was 30 days prior. The things that I needed to focus on was no alcohol, no coffee, which was the hardest one for me because at that time I drank a lot of coffee. The diet, no meats and no dairy. I was already vegan, so that one was very easy for me. And then the question that we got a lot from you guys regarding how to prepare is sex. They also ask you to abstain from sex for, I think, a minimum of 2 weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks.
I didn't have that experience. So.
He didn't do that. I did. And the reason why we think the reason why they ask you to abstain from sex for a few days prior is because when two people are together and when two people make love or when they have sex, it's two energies merging into one, two energies becoming one. You're receiving and you're giving at the same time. So of course, after a sexual encounter, you're carrying someone else's energy. If you read about this, it might be shocking to find it online. There's so many articles and research on how humans carry someone else's energy after sex for 7 years. That's what we read, right? And you need to work on that and letting it go, and you have your process. But just for you to have an idea of what happens, sex is not just a physical thing, it's a very spiritual and energetic union of two souls and the energy flowing through both bodies. Do your research, try to find out more, ask people who have done ayahuasca ceremonies, and maybe they have a different version. This is what I believe in based on what I've studied and read and my own experiences. And funny enough, the next episode for season 2 will be on sexuality. So we'll be talking about energy when it comes to a sexual encounter, making love, tantric sex, and the whole thing, not just the physical mumbo jumbo, like Santiago calls it.
Clearly, I'm the more immature of the two when it comes to that subject. So you'll hear more about my ridiculous way of thinking in episode number 11. Preparation, ayahuasca, going back to what's important. Be comfortable.
Yes.
You know, bring very loose clothing, warm sweaters, your pillow if you'd like, a plush toy, your little altar, yoga mat, inflatable mattress, whatever it is. You're going to be like a baby on the ground for at least 6 hours. At least. Where getting up is going to be difficult. Going to the bathroom, impossible.
And also mind and spirit, go with an open mind and an open spirit. Surrender, like I mentioned when I was sharing my own ayahuasca ceremony, my experience, you need to surrender to the plants. You need to surrender to La Abuelita, to Mother Nature. Think and ask. That's what I did. I asked the plant to protect me and to go slow, and it took care of me in the most beautiful way. So you need to trust a lot and imagine that you're being protected during your entire ceremony. That helps. Also, Santiago was mentioning an altar. You can take things with you. In my case, I took, of course, my journal, because after the ceremony, I didn't want to forget what I had experienced, and I wrote it down. And now 7 years later, I still have that notebook, and I keep reading it and going back and understanding so many things that are happening in my life right now. So always write it down. You can also take your crystals. I have don't buy crystals anymore, and you've heard me talk about this on my social media. It's a non-renewable resource and we're exploiting it. But if you have crystals at home that are very powerful, I cherish mine. They're old and beautiful. You can take them with you to the ceremony. Create your circle of protection. That's what I did. So I had my notebook, some crystals around me, a Ganesh. I think I also took my Buddha. If you, whatever you consider your God, your energy, your source, you can take that with you too. I'm a person that believes in so much energy, guys. So I had this beautiful shawl, and I think it was from my grandmother, and it carried a lot of love. So I took it with me, and it was like a pashmina, and I put it on top. And those were the things that I took with me whenever I needed. They helped me whenever I needed to ground. So when I felt like I was flying too high and becoming fearful and just couldn't process all the information that I was receiving, I would hold a crystal or hold my grandmother's pashmina or the Ganesh or the Buddha, and I felt like I was coming back to the human dimension. And then when I surrendered again, ayahuasca would take over and take me on another trip. So that's something that I would definitely recommend. The most important part, and Santiago was going to talk about this.
Wet wipes.
No, babe. No drugs and pharmaceuticals.
But wet wipes are very important also. Like, honestly, it's partly a joke, but it's very, very real, especially if you purge, because it means you will probably have explosive diarrhea and vomit for at least 2 to 3 hours. And that can be very, very messy in your space and in other people's space. So wet wipes can be a miracle during one of those ceremonies. What's super important, it's you shouldn't even be at the ceremony if you're taking SSRIs.
Antidepressants.
Like, don't even think about ayahuasca until you talk to your doctor and or fully detox from all your SSRIs. And that, depending on your dose, can be, you know, a couple months to a couple years. So be very, very careful, because the interaction between the ayahuasca or yahe brew and SSRIs can lead to a serotonin syndrome, which can lead to death. So please, some people have died on ayahuasca. This isn't one of those miracle drugs where nothing happens. Like, you have to be very, very careful and very mindful of who you are, where you are, you know, how you're feeling, what you're taking. It's not just like the window of opportunity opens, you just jump through it. Like, your intuition has to tell you, you know, am I at ground level or am I 20 stories high? Like, how is this going to impact my fall? You know, how much do I have to adjust to what's about to happen? You know, you want to get there as clean as possible, whether you believe in energy or not. Just, you know, simple, clean food, good sleep, good relationships, clean mind.
As clean as possible.
Clean energy, anything. You know, just come as prepared as you can, as prepared as you would go scuba diving, or as prepared as you would go up a mountain.
Or enter a temple. It's your way of respecting the plant too. That's how we show respect, by being prepared and going prepared and doing this cleanse and this very purifying diet in a way. That leads us to our second question. Oh, this one is a good one. You already mentioned it. What are the dangers? Santiago just mentioned it, but is there anything else that you want to add?
Well, that's part of the preparation. Like, again, it shouldn't even be a danger. It's not a risk. It's just a red flag. Don't even think about it. But some of the more tangible dangers is, one, ayahuasca tourism. Be very careful with the place you work with or the shaman you meet. There have been some stories of pseudo shamans, or, you know, crooks calling themselves witch doctors or whatever, taking advantage of patients who are in the middle of the ceremony. Again, as I mentioned, you will be completely motionless for at least 6 hours, or with very, very limited motion. And if someone wants to take advantage of you, you're in a very dire situation. It doesn't happen often, but it has happened. And that's one of the main reasons why you should be very, very trustful of the person and the location where you're going to be doing it. It's an energetical thing. Yeah, maybe it has good reviews on Yelp or whatever is rating ayahuasca retreats nowadays, booking.com, whatever it is. But the point here is, trust your own judgment, your own instinct. What does your spirit tell you? I think those are big dangers, ending up in the wrong place with the wrong person.
And this is something we mentioned at the beginning. Ayahuasca has become very commercialized, and that's what you should be aware of. If you're thinking of having your ceremony, make sure that you're doing your research. Ask your friends, ask people that you know about their experiences, what their shamans, where they did it. Don't just go online looking for a retreat and sign up for anything you might not have enough information about, in order to avoid situations like Santiago was explaining. Another thing that I would recommend is watching the documentary The Last Shaman. You will understand so much about what's happening with ayahuasca right now, how commercialized it is, how it's the situation in the Amazon. There's even shamanic wars between shamans, where some shamans have seen, have connected with the greed behind ayahuasca, the massive tourism, all these people looking to be part of a ceremony, and these shamans, I don't know what to call them, but they're new, it's not like they come from generations of healing and work, and they just saw the opportunity of having these ceremonies in the Amazon because of the massive tourism. So it became more of a greedy part of this healing plant. And then you have what they call the good shamans, and you'll see this in the documentary. And these are beautiful human beings, so wise, with so much information and wisdom to share with the world. Some of them don't even charge for the ceremonies, and they're trying to do good in our world, but they're even being kicked out of their communities because they don't want to charge, or they're being completely shadow banned in a way. So you'll understand everything in this documentary, and also the story of the man that shares this documentary. He's taking antidepressants, like Santiago was mentioning, so you'll see all that there. I definitely recommend it. It's called The Last Shaman, and you can find it on Netflix, I think.
Cool. Next question.
Next question is how to choose a good shaman, which I think we just covered it. Anything else you want to add to that?
I mean,
trust your instinct.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend the Peruvian shaman from my second ceremony in Costa Rica, but like tracing them back is going to be a little difficult.
But yeah, don't chase what's popular, which I think everyone is doing right now.
No, but go by recommendation from somebody you trust, not somebody you randomly meet. Like, definitely don't take my recommendation. Like, most of the listeners have never met me in person. I can be anyone, you know, like just the fact you hear it online or you see it online or you read it online doesn't mean it's the right one for you. Just follow your heart. It's very difficult to say, like, we each have our own radar and our own boundaries, and you know what is uncomfortable for one of us is very comfortable for the other person. So, you know, Valeria likes small ceremonies. I don't mind larger ceremonies. You know, it all depends on the ratio of how many people are helping the shaman. Like, that alone is a bit of a red flag to me personally. If the shaman has no one helping him out, it's like, okay, well, because the shamans take ayahuasca with you. They don't take the same amount, and they're more used to taking it, so they know how to navigate the feeling or the experience. But they're also not 100% in their senses. So if somebody goes astray in the middle of the jungle, or stands in the wrong location, or, you know, steps on something they shouldn't, it's going to be a massive problem to keep the whole community together. So that's mainly, you know, the reason why these groups are large. At least 3 people, I would say, is the bare minimum to manage at least, I don't know, 12 people?
Yeah, completely. In my ceremony, we were 10 and we had 3 shamans. So that leads us to our next question. What would we do differently? And in my case, it would be choosing the setting. I would love to do it surrounded by nature, not in a room with no lights. I would love to be able to know who's sitting in my circle, especially people that I'd love and love me back, and it's energy that is familiar to you. So I think that makes it easier too. And what else would I would do for it? Maybe surrender even more. I do feel like I tried to control during my ceremony, so there were times where I couldn't feel the benefits of the plant, but then when I finally surrendered, it took over me and I had this magical experience. So for this one, I would just let go completely and trust that I'm being guided and taken care of.
I wouldn't change anything. I think, you know, I'm very appreciative of the opportunity of having come across ayahuasca with 3 very different shamans and in 3 very different locations and moments of my life. And to me, the fact that it's people I know or not doesn't really matter, because at some point you all become family in the middle of the trip. And, you know, that's for example, one of the takeaways from the Costa Rica experience. Like, I walked in being kind of judgy of who was next to me and thinking, oh, I don't know this guy, and what about the other guy, and, you know, what happens if this and what happens if that. And then you just merge into one big energy and then come out of it and realize you're back in your avatar and you're like, hey guys, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize your energy as being part of mine. So there's that experience. You know, how much you think you can control the experience itself, you can't. It controls you entirely, 100%. All you can do is surrender, and that's why it's a common word, and, you know, it's becoming a little, whatever, tech bro slang, but the reason you must surrender, it doesn't mean like being on your knees and praying and falling victim of this situation, but surrender to the experience. If there is an open door, go through the door. You know, you're in a four-walled room and there's one door, like, you cannot stay in that room. You have to go through the door. And then if you see a staircase, go up the staircase. And, you know, some of it is metaphorical, some of it is literal, but do the exploration, take advantage, because it's a very, very strong experience that will change your life. And you don't want to miss the opportunity to make the most of it. So in that sense, also come prepared with some questions. Not all questions. Some will arise in the middle of the ceremony, or one will be enough to answer them all. But the point here is, you know, kind of have an idea, a guide map of what are the pit stops you would like to have. And then just let the plant take over and lead you anywhere.
And the last recommendation from my end would be to create space for integration. And I don't mean immediately after your ceremony, but years from that day. Like, I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 years. You'll still be processing what you experienced during your ceremony. We have friends that have had beautiful ceremonies too, but some of them said, like, I didn't feel ayahuasca answered all my questions. I don't think ayahuasca will give you the exact answers that you're looking for. It's not like it will tell you, yes, this will happen, or here's your future and this is how your life will unfold. But it does show you what you're supposed to see in a particular moment in your life. It also shows you what you have inside, a combination of all that love and also maybe your insecurities, things that you need to work on. But it will not give you yes or no answers. Don't expect that. I think it's best if you enter the ceremony with no expectations. And I know that helped me tremendously. I just had questions whether or not I was protected, but not so much as should I buy a house and move to India tomorrow. No, it was just show me what I'm supposed to see right now in my life and I'll surrender completely. And I think that helps to connect with this magical plant and to understand the healing power of it.
So again, two sides of the story. No, in one, you just fully let loose and bring no expectations and no questions. In the other, you have some general questions. I don't know. Do both. Maybe write down the questions.
No, definitely but let have yourself questions. Definitely have questions, but don't expect, don't pre-populate the answers in your mind. Just go with questions and let the plant, the mother, nature give you the answers. They might not be what you're expecting. That's what I mean. So don't take it personal. Don't think that another ayahuasca ceremony right after that one to get more answers.
I don't know. You guys have to write us and let us know if it works for you. But what happens if you ask yes, no questions? Like, I never even thought about... I mean, maybe because the universe works with binary code, it's much easier if you ask, you know, black or white, one or zero, yes or no questions. It would be interesting. Somebody let us know. Write us on Instagram after you hear this episode and share it with all your friends and family. Write us and let us know, does ayahuasca help answer yes and no questions?
Yeah, that would be beautiful. And the last part that we wanted to cover is the current situation of shamans and the plant, which is in danger of extinction. This, again, is focused on the fact that we are commercializing ayahuasca beyond measure. Massive amounts of tourists. Everyone is looking for healing, which is something beautiful, but it got out of our hands. And it's putting shamans in danger in the fact that you can share more about that too. But you'll understand everything in this documentary that I mentioned, guys, The Last Shaman. The dangers between shamans, the fights between shamans, between communities, why this plant is currently in danger of extinction, the overuse of it, the misuse, people just going to ceremonies because they want the next high and they want to experience, I don't know, all these physical sensations that we go through and not so much the spirituality. And yeah, educate yourself. We need to understand how powerful this is and we need to show respect.
I mean, it's amazing if you go just for the body high, but keep in mind, you know, it's like walking into a church just to see the art. Like, it's amazing. It's fun. You go see a temple and wow, amazing. Look at this mosque. How beautiful this mosaic. But you will probably never have a mystical experience if you walk into a shrine of some sort with that mentality. But if you walk in there believing in God and in miracles, like chances are they will happen and that God will exist to you. So, you know, these are two very different sides of the story and the experience that you're allowed to have.
We truly hope that these words resonated with you, that we answered some of your questions or doubts. We can't wait to hear about your own experiences. Again, I think we shared the legality, illegality of this already, all the disclaimers. I think you did.
Yeah, we always have to include extra disclaimers in case we forgot the disclaimers, in case we get disclaimed. But yeah, this is very illegal in most of the world. You know, a lot of people are shady and will take advantage of you. Not every shaman is a real shaman. Mm-hmm. Do not do drugs because you hear two random strangers on a podcast saying that ayahuasca is cool. Like, be very, very careful, very smart, and don't blame us for anything. You have full control of your life.
And that's all from our end, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. This concludes season one. We can't wait for season two. Thank you for all the support. We love you. Big hug your way.
Peace.